This episode is brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts that you won't find anywhere else, to small-batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
A couple of last-second surprises added more intrigue to an already lively and exciting local race, and the Canby City Council is now guaranteed to have some new faces on it come January. Canby High School government and history teacher Christopher Bangs pulled paperwork Thursday morning, the last day to file, and scrambled together the necessary signatures to qualify before the 5 p.m. deadline. Meanwhile, another incumbent, current council president Tim Dale, allowed the deadline to pass without turning in his own finalized application. Dale is a software engineer who has served as counselor since being appointed in 2011. He was appointed, ironically, to replace another candidate in this year's race, Jason Padden. Padden had stepped down from the council after 2 years due to work commitments related to the job he held at the time. Dale is one of two Canby natives and CHS graduates on the council, the other being Sarah Spoon. The Canby Now podcast has reached out to Dale for comment, but he has not responded. Spoon did file for re-election, as did another incumbent, Tracy Hensley. They will be joined in the race by Padden and newcomers James Hibb, Jordan Tibbles, and Bangs. Incumbent Mayor Brian Hodson ended the day unopposed in his bid for a fifth term in office. The former one-term city councilor has not drawn an opponent since he first won the position from incumbent Randy Carson in 2012. Councilors serve four-year terms with their expiration dates alternating such that three of them normally open every 2 years. The fourth seat in this election is the result of the former councilor Tracy Heights' resignation last year. Councilors are elected at large, meaning the top three vote-getters, or in this case the top four, will win the open seats. For this election, the candidate with the fourth most votes will serve only the remaining 2 years of Heights' original term. After less than 3 days, the state's new program offering one-time relief payments of $500 to Oregonians impacted by the coronavirus shutdowns have run out of cash. The program was designed to help the thousands who still have not had their full unemployment claims processed, some of whom have been waiting since March. With $35 million in federal coronavirus relief fund dollars allocated to the program, the unique private-public partnership would allow approximately 70,000 Oregonians to receive checks, with those in need reportedly lined up for two and three blocks at participating credit unions throughout the Portland metro area. They hit that number in 3 days, and the program was already winding down as of Friday morning. Participating financial institutions had a final funding allotment camp for the day and were not accepting new walk-in applications once they reached the allotment cap. Previously scheduled appointments would continue through the end of the month. Legislative leaders said but the new appointments will not be made. I want to thank the financial institutions that have stepped up in an emergency and are continuing to work so hard to get money into the hands of desperate Oregonians, Senate President Peter Courtney said. We said from the beginning that we know that this is not enough money to help all those in need, but we had to take action to get money directly to people as quickly as possible, and this is a tremendous example of Oregonians pitching in to help our most vulnerable. After 2 days, the program delivered funds to payments to nearly 40,000 eligible Oregonians in need. On the first day of the program, 62% of $500 payments went to zip codes outside the Portland metropolitan area, according to the offices of Courtney and House Speaker Tina Kotek. These last couple days have put a spotlight on just how dire the need is all across the state, Kotek said. We have to get more money to help people. The federal government has the ability to make direct stimulus payments to Americans whose lives are in jeopardy and are not doing so. I find this incredibly frustrating and disappointing. The offices of the House Speaker and Senate President say they will follow up with more detailed information and data about the program as soon as it's available, including which geographic locations were served. Interim City Administrator Amanda Zyber will not be staying on past her original resignation date of September 2nd, according to a letter to Zyber from Mayor Brian Hodson Friday that had been obtained by the Camby Now podcast. Zyber, who is officially Camby's Assistant City Administrator and Human Resources Manager, has been with the city for 14 years and served in the interim role on two prior occasions. Her current stint being in February, following the termination of Scott McClure 4 months into the job. She informed the Camby City Council in writing over 2 months ago that she would be resigning effective September 2nd, and her resignation has been accepted, Hodson's letter said. However, following a meet and greet with three finalists to be the new city administrator Tuesday night, Zyber told local media she intended to stay on until the new manager was on board, which she estimated at 6 weeks or early October. We, the City Council, would like to continue to honor the original date that you chose, Hodson wrote Friday. At this point, to do otherwise would require an official action to the next regular City Council meeting. The letter was sent to Zyber and also copied to other members of the City Council. We know you will continue to facilitate a smooth transition of projects and programs before your last day, Hodson concluded. Please know that we appreciate your many years with the City of Camby and wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. Reached for comment Friday evening, Zyber confirmed that she had announced her separation on July 17th with an effective date of September 2nd. She did not give a reason. The last 2.5 months went by so fast, she said in an email. I have had a great career here in Camby and I am looking forward to my next adventure. It has been my pleasure to serve the community, and I have been honored to meet so many wonderful people along the way. Reached by phone, Mayor Hodson reiterated his respect and appreciation for Zyber. I think the world of Amanda, he said, and I think she has done a tremendous job as HR manager and assistant city manager, and as interim city administrator. She's done that for us 3 times now, and I'm sad to see her go. The council has chosen and informed its preferred city administrator candidate, though his name has not been revealed pending a thorough background investigation. Hodson said it may take as long as 6 or even 8 weeks to bring the new administrator on board, but it could also happen much more quickly than that. In the past, I think it's taken more than 3 or 4 weeks to get it done, he said. We're very confident in the person we've chosen, and he's really excited about the opportunity and eager to get going. Governor Kate Brown on Friday threatened further restrictions on businesses and travel to and from Oregon if the state's coronavirus outlook doesn't start improving more rapidly by the end of the next month. Oregon's per capita cases counts remain lower than most states, and many key indicators for measuring the spread of COVID-19 show that these numbers are declining further still, but not quickly enough, according to Brown. "We have truly slowed the spread of the virus," she said in a press conference with state public health officials. "It's not enough. The infection rate is too high if we were to get our kids safely back in the classroom this fall. The number of infections has stabilized at around 300 per day, while the governor says Oregon must reduce that number to 60 or less to meet her office's criteria for safely reopening schools. At the current rates, Oregon would reach that threshold in about 200 days, or mid-March 2021. According to the state's latest modeling report, however, the state's average transmission rate of 1.0, meaning each sick individual is infecting one more, were to fall just under a quarter of a point to 0.75, we can get this done in as little as 6 weeks, Brown said. "When it comes to controlling the virus, we have the tools," she said. "We have boiled down to the new standards wearing face masks at all times in public, maintaining at least six feet of distance from others, limiting gathering sizes, frequent hand washing, and compliance with isolation and quarantine protocols. We need everyone to use them." Saying the state is at a turning point, she issued an ultimatum: comply with the existing policies to stem the spread of COVID-19, or else you will add more restrictions, including potential business closures and a travel ban. "I believe, and the data indicates, that either of these strategies will work," she said. "Either one will drive down the spread of this virus more quickly. Either one gives us a fighting chance to open up in-person instruction in K-12 education in much of the state later this fall. But one path has a far greater cost than the other. Those costs include real and often devastating impacts on individuals and families," she acknowledged, "and can come in the form of lost income, food and housing insecurity, increased stress, mental health challenges, self-harm, domestic violence, and suicide. Economic costs have real health consequences," she says. "And that's why I have been so reluctant to order further business shutdowns. We can wrestle this virus to the ground and set an example for the nation. I know that local leaders, businesses, and workers can step up and get the job done." Cambie Bible College has helped its last class of students transition to new opportunities, the ministry of Cambie Foursquare Church said in its final newsletter this week. Sadly, the college announced in June that it would be permanently closing after 22 years of ministry due to financial challenges that are affecting all institutions of higher education, as well as the fundraising and promotional challenges that have come with the coronavirus pandemic. "Our first priority in closing process was to be sure our students were cared for and helped in their transfer to other colleges, if they chose to do that," CBC Administrator Angie Wiggins said in an email. "Thanks to the generosity of local donors, the school has provided scholarships to students who were full-time and on track to graduate this coming year, which can be directed toward their tuition in a new college. Scholarships were also extended to international students who had planned on attending CBC to earn their associate degree. Beyond caring for the students, we are working hard to finish well with the governing agencies we are connected to, with the paperwork necessary in all of this, and in the many relationships that have developed," Wiggins said. The college asks for prayer for its students and final arrangements, as well as donations for those who are able, which would go toward closing expenses and/or scholarships. One final CBC experience, a summer prayer retreat at Mount Angel Abbey, is being planned for September. For details, contact Wiggins at awiggins@cambiebiblecollege.org. CBC President and Cambie Foursquare Senior Pastor Ron Swor previously said that the decision to close the certified Bible college he had helped found in 1998 came with gut-wrenching sadness and heartache. Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
No. I mean, like, transparent, as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah, like DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah, which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers, and they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
My guests on the Cambie Conversation today are Jeremy Conroy. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. How you doing?
We also have your wife, Denise, with us. Not sure how much she'll talk. She's also distracted by a baby that I brought. So. But you're here to tell us a little bit about a really cool project that you guys are doing in Aurora. Yep. Conroy Classics. Tell us a little bit about it.
So it's been a two-year process. We bought the property approximately November of 2018.
Okay.
And then just slowly started the design process, which took about a year. And then we just transferred from the design into getting approval through the Historic Review Board, through the Board of Directors. We had some issues with the size of the building being very large, mm-hmm. And trying to fit it on the lot and trying yeah. to make the neighbors and stuff happy. So yeah. we just recently in the last month got approval from the city of Aurora with our design for parking and the spaces and the size of it. And so they're just changing a few code things to...
Yeah.
So we can move forward and go for permitting.
Yeah, so it's mixed use, which is something that's a little more rare for the area, and especially Aurora. I'm not sure that they had really any.
Yeah. So they, when we went in, we were just thinking we were going to do a showroom, about a 5,000 square foot showroom.
Yeah.
And they said that they were short on housing. They didn't have any rental housing, and so they asked us if we'd be interested in adding apartments above.
Cool. I didn't know that was their idea. That's cool.
That started out as yeah. their idea. There was a lot of restrictions. They have a 35-foot height restriction in the city, and I wanted my shop to be a certain height, and we're trying to make the apartments even have an old-school feel to them,
yeah.
which common are 10-foot ceilings and
sure.
you know, open pipes and... And so we had a lot of restrictions. I had to get my shop a little bit shorter than I wanted.
Yeah.
But I believe the upstairs apartments will be 10 feet. The penthouses will be 10 feet ceiling height. And the downstairs units will be 9-foot ceilings. And then my shop ended up being around 11-foot
yeah.
ceilings.
Yeah. Yeah. And the you talked a little bit about the interior style. The exterior yep. style is really designed to evoke the historic building that once stood on that property.
Yep, yep. We tried to mimic the outside as close as we could. We're going to, on some units, we're going to try to get some antique fireplaces, different aspects from
cool.
the historical. There's a...
Just from down the street, you probably...
Yeah, down the street. Yeah, no, down the street, the architectural salvage place.
Yeah.
And we've looked in there periodically, and
sure.
so we'll take pieces of that.
That's
and we'll
so
try to
cool.
get them inside to give the inside building an older feel. It's tough when you're building apartments and you have hallways,
yeah.
and you don't want it to be a modern-looking building, but then you still have to get the... You want it to last at the
yeah.
same time, and you have to get it approved through
yeah.
the city, and
yeah.
so we decided to put in elevators too, which so there's going to be an elevator for each floor.
Mm.
So in doing that, we had to provide ADA for every bathroom. All units are ADA accessible because we decided to put elevator. But we just thought if we were going to do a nice space there, to have an elevator for the penthouse suites and
yeah.
the
yeah.
apartments would be nice to have.
Yeah. And you guys are thinking about having a space there for yourselves as well.
We've designed one.
Yeah.
It's very large.
Yeah.
But it's approximately
20. That's your prerogative when you own the
yeah.
building, right?
Yep.
And you're designing it.
So one of the units we designed for us and our space, is, my wife and I, is it's about 2,400 square feet.
Mm.
And then it has about a 350 square foot outdoor patio area
that
should have a good view from the top floor.
On the third floor.
Third floor facing north, I would be northern view.
Have a view of all the vast Aurora cityscape
laid out behind it. Is, yeah. yep, yep.
Cool. That's gotta be interesting. So you guys will kind of be the landlords as well as living there.
Yeah,
so.
I think the first year, just because we're new to it, we're not developers. We just, it was a dream and passion we had. So I think the first year we're gonna start with having a management company do it, and then after we get the tenants in there, we'll slowly take over.
Depending on who the tenants are, right?
Depending on who the tenants are. Yeah. But you know, usually they say if you bring in higher end units, you'll bring in decent people. So I think that we're thinking the middle level apartments will rent between 1300 and 1400, and they're 800 square feet, give or take a little bit. And the upstairs units will be in the 2500 range.
So I bet you'll have affordable. A lot of interest from like shop owners and people that work down in that historic district.
New, close to the freeway, close to shopping and the Colony pub and some other things. So it's close in.
Yeah.
Close to a lot of parks.
Yeah. I wanted to come back to one thing you mentioned just because it's something that's kind of unique to Aurora, working with that historic review board. So where this property is located, they have a certain district, kind of that downtown core, the antique sector, a lot of people would kind of associate it with, but a lot of the either original buildings or at least in this case original lot that were part of the original colony, and there's a lot of restrictions over how things have to look and even what kind of uses you can do there.
A lot of restrictions.
They take it seriously.
They take it very seriously.
It's like 10 people or something. It's like a bigger board.
It got smaller and smaller as COVID hit,
I
believe when the last one I went to, there was 5 or 6 of them. We knew who the lady was prior to design, so we went and talked to her personally in her shop just to get some insight of what we should do in the design, so we're not having to design things, change design or anything. But overall, they were a ton of restrictions, but it's all for the right reasons. We worked with them a little bit. Some of it was the height of the building. At one point we thought about having an upstairs sitting area, but they didn't want umbrellas showing, and so where we put the outdoor patios and stuff like that, they don't want to see umbrellas, just anything in its sight. So we're just designing some of that stuff to make them happy. Sometimes it was just a band board that they wanted between elevations on the outside that they wanted a little bit wider. They wanted more decoration on the top, and then they get a little bit involved with paint colors. The type of materials you can use.
Right.
They want you to use all wood products, and wood products are kind of going out the wayside anymore. Sure. They're not as safe. They don't last as long. There's a lot more maintenance, and so we wanted to build a maintenance-free building. And so they've worked with us a lot with using other types of products.
Yeah. They made you have to do steam powered. That was kind of annoying. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No. But really, it hasn't. We haven't hit any real hiccups with them. The first meeting, one lady wasn't happy with it, that it was going to be 35 feet tall, but that's the restriction, and we pushed it to every inch to be able to fit it in there.
And then the car sales, so that's not wasn't an approved use.
Right.
They ended up creating an exception for you, but that's not even necessarily what you plan on doing.
What we planned on doing when we started it. It may be as I retire, but we just wanted somewhere to be able to store and showcase our vehicles and local residents from Canby, Aurora, Hubbard, to be able to store them there and just show their rigs off if they wanted to, with like a poster board to describe them. So that way you have rolling inventory. We're hoping every 2 to 3 months there'll be 20 plus cars in there that are going to be a different inventory. So that's what we started out as, and the city, they knew that we sold them also, and so we went back and forth, and they decided that they're going to go through the process of changing their code of being able to do car sales. I pushed that I wanted it to be antique car sales. I didn't want a Subaru dealer pulling in right next to me or something. So we pushed it to be antique vehicles, and so they're in the process of changing their code that you can do antique car sales within the historical district.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have very tight codes about what you can do in the historical district.
Yeah.
So it should work out well. It's not like we're going to be parking cars out outside. Right. We designed the front of the building to be 10 feet wide so we could park a car in front, you know, during the day, but nothing that anything's going to be out overnight or over a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, we've made it this far in the conversation without really talking about your what's powering all this, your love for classic cars.
Yep. I don't know how I don't know how I got it before, but I just I got into it. Yeah, 13, 14 years ago, and pretty much anything I do, I go into about 110, 120%.
Yeah.
And it's hard to slow me down. And so I had always...
Is that true, Denise?
So no matter what I, you know, and so I've always bought and sold something. Before this, it was four-wheelers.
Yeah.
And I've always bought and sold. And so I just fell in love with the cars, and then I would just do the history on them. I'd probably spend more time doing the research about what is a 68 Camaro, what's a, you know, super sport, what's a rally sport. And so I just love doing the, you know, the review on them and research on them. And I was just always been fascinated by, you know, rare one-off cars, or, you know, you can't get a lot of information on these older cars. But you can get enough information that, you know, you can find out if it's one of 300 built. Mm-hmm. And so I just got fascinated by just doing the research on them and the hunt of finding them, and the rush of selling them and just meeting. You meet a lot of new people, too.
They
have the same passion, the same interest you do. They have a classic car.
The history can be interesting, right? Because it's not contained, right? I mean, the history of classic cars in a lot of ways is the history of America.
It is,
There are certain reasons that things were done that way that are really reflective of larger society during the time that these cars were made.
Yep, and you know, certain cars that they may have mass produced back then now aren't really that popular cars. They were four doors aren't really popular cars, mm-hmm. but a lot of people had family cars.
Right.
There's
old station wagons.
Station wagons are probably one of the hotter things. Even vans, station wagons. Some of those are now going into the $20,000-$30,000 range. We sold a 2-door wagon about 2 years ago for $38,000.
Wow.
And so you know, some of those cars are starting to come back, which is kind of exciting to see. And you see generations of cars, you know, the Model A, Model T's, which are the early 1900 cars, they're just kind of they're dying out as that generation passes away. And so you start to see some of the 40s cars and 50s cars. I've been doing a long time, but you can slowly see it. And then lately we've been seeing a lot of the more which cars that I wanted when I was in high school, the 80s type cars, the 80s Toyota pickups and 280Zs and 240Cs, which they were never classified as classic cars, but now they are, and they're highly collectible, and that's kind of the new wave of cars that are getting popular.
Yeah. Well, not to date you or age you, but you're a little bit younger than kind of the typical classic car enthusiast crowd around here, aren't you?
Yep, I'm 47. I still... Like I said, I got into this 13, 14 years ago, so then I was really young then.
Yeah.
A lot of our friends that we travel all over the country going to shows and auctions and stuff like that, and most of my friends that go with us, they're late 60s, early 70s.
Sure.
And so we get along with them fine. We have the same passion. We like to go do the same things.
Yeah.
And some of it, a lot of them are retired guys, and so they just like to help out. You know, I pay them to help me deliver the cars, detail the cars, and it's just something that turns into a passion for them too, that they get to be able to travel and see all these cars and help out, and it's been kind of fun.
And for them, there's some of probably some nostalgia that comes with it, right? Like they kind of brings it back to their glory days a little bit.
Yes, a lot of drag racing stories and just stories. And I mean, that's part of the fun of hanging out with them.
Sure.
The story is one of our good friends. We went to dinner with him last night. He used to drag race all over the country with a guy named Twig Ziegler, which still does racing now, but they would hop in their station wagon with a trailer behind it, and they'd book to Utah to hit a race over the weekend and then be back to work on Monday. And so he just, the stories he tells and, you know, just the way of life that it was then, that if you put a car behind a station wagon now and went 90 miles an hour down the freeway, you'd pretty much suicide.
Yeah.
But back then it was the norm, and it was, you know, the weekends were all about going to the drag strips and racing and racing on the streets and cars and just the stories of the cars they had and what they paid for them back then. And you always hear that same story. So I wish I had that car, you know, I paid $1,000 for that car.
Right. And, I wish I kept it.
I wished I kept it. You hear that over and over and over again. You come across some people, though, that have owned cars for, 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. That split window, my favorite car, it came from a guy who bought it in 1983. Mm-hmm. And so he owned it almost 40 years. Only put 10,000 miles on it in 40 years. But it's neat seeing the stories where people, they keep a car for a very long time. It's neat seeing the family history. And one of my first keepers was a 69 Camaro. And it was his family car. I bought it probably 10 years ago. And so he had it 30 some years, and it had 380,000 original miles on it. But he knew every dent on it, every scrape on it.
Sure.
But that was their family car for years. Awesome. And I bought it from the original owner. So it's neat getting the history and just meeting the person that owned it from the beginning and how their life changed as they owned the car. You know, they're young, and then they have a family, and then they have grandkids, and he ended up having to sell it to help pay for his granddaughter's college. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason he sold the car that he had that long. It's neat meeting people like that.
And that's cool. I mean, that's a good reason, right?
Able
to invest in the next generation.
And a lot of people I stay in contact with. Mm. And some of the friends I've met is just from people that I've went and bought their cars or helped them sell their cars, and then they just end up being, you got something in common to start, and we've just, a lot of our friends have met that way.
Well, I've been to a number of Cutsworth Cruise Inn and of classic car events, and they really do seem to be as much a social event as anything else. I mean, the guys, they've all got their camp chairs that they put out, and they always leave a couple of empty ones, and they just love to talk cars.
I'd say there's different groups of collectors. There's ones that just a husband and wife, that's all they do during the summer, is just go to car shows and travel. There's even some that travel around when they retire. They just get a motorhome and a trailer, and they travel all over to different car shows throughout the United States. And then we do car shows, but we're more into the bigger events. We get busy, so we go to the bigger Barrett Jacksons, Meekums, Hot August Nights down in Reno, which is one of the biggest car shows in the world. And so we go to a lot of the bigger events. Good Guys comes to Spokane, and they come up to Puyallup, and those are car shows where there's 3,500 to 4,000 cars.
Wow.
We go to Cuts First, and some of the in-town ones, they're usually between 200 and 700 cars is getting to be a lot at a local show. So we like going to the big ones. You get some of the high-end builds that come from Canada, and some of the TV shows that have builders on TV shows that are building $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 cars. You go to the big shows, and they'll be bringing those cars that, you know, you're never going to have a chance to ever see. And so it's kind of neat to see that.
Yeah, Cutsforce had right around 750 last year. That was the most that they had, and it felt big. I mean, you felt like there's no way I can see all of these, and it was sprawling all into different blocks and stuff.
It kind of makes your head spin. And you go to these big ones, and you can't just walk through them in a day. It takes us. We the first time I ever went, I went with my friend Skip, and we thought we'd go up for the day, and we didn't even put a dent in the amount of cars. Mm. And, you know, it's not just cars when you go to the shows. There's memorabilia. There's, you know, people selling car parts, and you can buy mattresses. Anything, everything for a salesman to come sell you something. You know,
good thing you can put a dent in any of those cars, too. They would have been mad, don't you?
Right. You got to be careful.
Well, I guess I wonder if some people wonder if it's kind of weird if you're talking about classic cars, which maybe to some sort of seems like a bit of a luxury item or whatnot during a tough economic time for a lot of people. But you've mentioned, you know, you were into this during the previous recession, and it seems to be a little bit, the market seems to be a little unique economically.
Yeah, I feel what we're going through now, we don't know. We don't know yet. When it went through in 07, 08, that was probably the most profitable and the easiest to buy and sell. A lot of investors were pulling money out of the stock market, pulling money out of real estate, and they were just buying classic cars, and just some collectors were buying hundreds and hundreds of them and just sat on them until the economy came back, and then they just liquidated them as a collateral to get their money back, and they doubled their money on many of them. Nowadays, I can tell you with COVID hitting, you get that a little bit of fear in you, but this has probably been the easiest it's ever been to sell locally. I usually only sell at auctions. in a 10-day period, I sold 13 cars.
Oh, wow.
So, I was very, very busy. I actually had to pull some cars off the internet because I just got too busy. I do this as a hobby and a side job. I would say the local sales is probably the hottest I've ever seen classic cars.
That's
interesting. Over the last 2-3 months, it's been crazy. Very hard to find.
That gives me hope, right?
Yeah.
That's an encouraging thing to hear. Yeah.
Yep. A lot of younger generation is getting into it. A lot of, I used to have, if I sold anything private party, it'd be 50, 60, 70 year olds. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've been having a lot of 30, 40 year olds that are coming in, they're getting financing, and I'm working with banks to help them get loans. Mm-hmm. And
that's cool.
It's been a younger generation where they can't go on a vacation or a trip. And so they just decide to buy a classic car to be able to, as an investment, to be able to spend some time together.
And there's
not a lot of car shows going on, very few.
Sure.
Some places still do what's called Cars and Coffee. We're just a, Burgervilles do them where you just go in the morning and you have car, you just drive your car there and you talk with your friends at a distance. Some of them make sure you have a car in between now, and then you go into the normal restaurant and get whatever, with your mask and anything, the new norm. And then you still have a car show and they can still interact with their friends.
Cool. Well, I'm afraid Denise's arms are going to start to get tired holding my baby for so long, so we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
But so Conroy Classics, can you give us a little bit of a sense of your timeline?
I think that we have about 2 to 4 weeks left of engineering, which is just in regards to the footings and the weight of the building. And then after that, it is probably 2 to 3 months of waiting on permits. Again, waiting on not knowing COVID. And so we anticipate that we'll be breaking ground on the Conroy Classics building, hopefully at the first of the year.
Well, we posted kind of a teaser story about this on our website and on social media. People are so excited about it, like, definitely saying that they're going to stop by and want to see it. And that's kind of what you were hoping, right? You're hoping that this is something that people get excited about and come see.
We've been anxious to put a sign up just saying coming soon, but we wanted to get all the approvals before we put that coming soon sign up. So with this last month, that's our next step. Is we'll be putting up a sign with the coming soon, with the, so people can see what the building's gonna look like, and the apartments are coming soon. So if they know somebody that's in the area that's looking for somewhere to live or an apartment,
I just love it. I think it's such a creative and wonderful project. I feel like if you've got a group of scientists and tried to create the perfect Aurora project, and it would be something very much like this.
We've got a lot of excitement from the people on the the people on the board and the residents and stuff. They're pretty excited about it. Some of them got a little bit nervous because it's such a large building, but most 100% positive feedback, and people are really excited about it. And just the look of the building is just fantastic with how it turned out.
Yeah, my baby's dropping the mic over there.
Well,
thank you, Jeremy, so much for your time telling us about this awesome project. Denise, thanks for babysitting. Sorry for dropping that on you. She was not expecting that. But best of luck to you guys. Thanks.
Nice. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was gonna go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time, and sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe two, three, four, five homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, on the Cami Conversation today, I'm here at a new business, Chug Coffee, with Sam Ribb.
How's it going?
And her mother, Paula Robeson.
Good afternoon.
And they are the new owners, operators, originators, founders, creative people behind Chug Coffee, the new stand that's opening up here in Aurora off on Highway 99. And it's sort of a rebirth of a business you previously had. Sam, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we previously owned R&R Cafe, which was located inside of Wilsonville Subaru.
Wait, what now?
R&R Cafe was our previous job inside of Wilsonville Subaru.
Inside a car dealership?
Inside of a car dealership.
It's a little bit interesting location for a coffee stand.
Definitely is. Yeah, so it was an opportunity that was just kind of plopped in our laps. The cafe was built into the dealership itself. It was previously run by a different company who I worked for almost a year. I kind of decided I wanted to go a different route, but the dealership really wanted to keep me there because they loved my personality and how I kind of blended in with, you know, their model of business and how they wanted their customers treated. That company, once I left, actually ended up pulling out of the space. So they decided that really wasn't their thing anymore.
Yeah.
They wanted to just kind of keep going with their other locations. So my mom and I approached them about a month after they had closed that cafe space down. It was sitting there empty, so they had nothing for their customers, nothing for their employees there. So we approached them just to say, hey, what are you guys doing with the space? And after a 2-hour-long meeting with the two general managers, we were opening a business. You know, why not?
Yeah. Now, I've had tons of people as well, because I'm just so amazing. They're always trying to get me to stay and open a business. I can't think of any right now, but there's been so many. So.
That's how it goes, right?
Yeah. How long did you guys do that?
We did it for about 1.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And built up a pretty good clientele, from what I understand. A lot of people, even with the unusual location, you had a bit of a strong following.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it definitely took some hard work. When we finally got established and I felt a little more comfortable and like we were handling things fairly well, I started pushing myself out to the community around. So I started posting in, you know, people of Wilsonville and any local groups, just saying, hey, did you guys know that there's a cafe in here? It's completely open to the public, but I promise, like, they're not gonna try to push a car on you, because of course that's your first thought, right? If I say come into a car dealership, what are you gonna think? Salespeople are gonna hound you right at the door. But they don't there. Their philosophy on everything is so different than a lot of car dealerships. And I don't just say that because I've worked in there. I've bought 2 cars from them. She's bought a car from them, you know. And so I told people, like, hey, just trust me. Come in. You're missing out. And so people finally decided, okay, I'm going to give this girl a shot. I'm going to try it and see.
Yeah.
So we had the first couple people that came in.
Get her to leave me alone, right?
Yeah. Hey, you know. I just want them to have good coffee. Okay? Yeah. That's all I'm about. And so I just had a couple people finally come in and tested it out, and sure enough, they posted back and said, hey, trust her, she's not kidding, they really did leave me alone. You know, you'd say, hey, I'm just here for coffee, and the guys there would be like, do you know where it is? Let me show you that way. And they'd just walk you right back there and say, all right, here's Sam, have a good day, and leave you alone.
What was your role in this whole thing, Paula? You have a background that's not as a barista necessarily.
My background is not barista. It's it's medicine for about 20 some odd years, and retired, and then was kind of a stay-at-home help grandma person. And then I decided this has always been her dream to do her own coffee shop. And so when Subaru was kind of plopped in our lap, I guess. I basically
sounds like it was.
I was the behind kicker and said, we can do this, let's do this, I'll help you. And so we just kind of went from there, and she ran with it.
Yeah. That's such an interesting business. So this is always your dream, Sam.
for a while.
Your mom said it was, so you can't deny it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, ever since I finally landed a job as a barista, I mean, I've worked in the food service industry for a while. My very first job was a hostess. Mm. I actually went to culinary school. I have a degree in pastry, so I was going to be a cake decorator. That's what I thought I wanted to do. When I finally got my very first job outside of pastry school and was doing the same thing day in, day out, I wasn't passionate about it. I didn't love it. And I realized this is not what I want to do. I've tried other jobs. I was like, let me step away from food service and just see. I tried customer service. I've tried retail. And I just ended up always going back to food service. So I landed a job as a barista mainly down in Bend when I lived down there for my husband's job. And was there with them for about a year and a half. And that's when I just really fell in love with being a barista. Because I always tell people it's like being a bartender, but without the drunks, right? No alcohol you have to deal with, anything like that. I caffeinate them and make their day a lot better.
Yeah.
And so I've always kind of wanted to do my own little thing. A drive-through has always kind of been my idea. I mean, I love the standing shop for the fact that my customers could come in and sit at my counter, or, you know, and if it was slow enough, I could sit there and chat with them. I'm not going to have that necessarily here. It'll be quick snippets, you know, maybe 5 minutes, I'll get to talk to them and send them on their way. But knowing that they're going to drive away with a smile on their face is the most important part.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So what happened with R&R?
So with R&R, of course, COVID hit and the dealership itself took a major hit. I mean, everybody did. Let's be honest. Everybody
did. Now, did they have to close?
They did not.
Okay.
No. So they're still essential. So they remained open. Their hours and everything were cut back a little bit. Their staff was cut back quite a bit. Business slowed way down. So, of course, we slowed down.
The economy.
Yep. Yeah. And so I started pushing myself out to the people instead. Hey, if you can't come in here, let me bring it to you. So I started doing some deliveries. We were doing hot deliveries and we're doing pretty well. We started doing cold deliveries once we actually got shut down. So we got shut down. The owners of the dealership, which is now, they're a Canadian company, saw the cafe as a high risk because it was considered a high touch area. And so they were kind of worried that we would be a little bit of a liability to them.
Gotcha.
I understand it. So anyway, we got shut down. We just haven't heard back as to when we could reopen. We kept trying to say, hey, you know, following along with the phases, seeing where things are at, you know, we were being very safe, making sure everything was clean. That's always our, you know, main priority is to make sure that everything is, I'm kind of a neat freak anyway. Right now it's a mess, but it'll get cleaner.
It's like you guys and the healthcare industry were like two, and I guess even like hair salons, and they got hit really hard too, but you look at like grocery stores or whatnot that maybe aren't, but restaurants are like already like, really concerned about cleanliness. That's already part of their licensing and stuff. It's not like, oh, disinfecting. Like that's a new thing. How do we do that?
Yeah. Temperatures. And I mean, temperatures and everything you got to keep track of.
Yeah.
So we just hadn't heard back. We had already had Chug in the works. So our original idea with Chug was actually to basically extend R&R. Toyota there in Wilsonville is owned by the same company. And so their employees would come over to our store from time to time and they'd always say, man, I really wish Toyota would have something like this. And my thought was, well, we could offer that to them. They don't have a space built in for it, but we could get something mobile, park it there, and then not only would their employees and customers have access to it, but outside people would have easier access to it too.
Yeah.
We didn't hear back from them very quickly on whether or not that was something they were interested in.
Yeah.
And then there was just always this gut feeling that I just wanted it somewhere that was easily accessible to people because I knew what we had was good and I wanted people to see that and have access to it.
Sure.
So I started just kind of digging around, seeing, you know, I knew there were other people in the past that had looked for places to put stands. So I just started kind of going back through groups and researching and I found that Aurora really wanted it. They used to have it years ago.
Yeah.
And I had actually talked to the owner. That owner reached out to me and we kind of chatted about why hers wasn't here anymore. But I knew people here wanted it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, there's nothing else there.
I guess it wasn't for lack of customer base. Did she?
It wasn't. So she ended up, she had just finished college and started her career.
Yeah.
And that kind of ended up being where she wanted to go and not do the coffee industry anymore. So she took it out. But I just decided this was kind of our place, and everything here so far has just kind of fallen right into place. Really, the only hang-up so far has been waiting for power.
Right.
Everything else has gone pretty smooth, so.
Well, and you guys can hear the background noise that we got going on there. Part of that is obviously the fridge and the things that you guys need to do your coffee when you do open, and part of it is the air conditioning, which I has specifically said you're not allowed to turn off, so you guys are just going to have to deal with it. Sorry about that. So, Chug was, you said, already in the works, an idea that you just wanted to do to kind of do your own thing, to open up to more customers. But tell me a little bit about the kind of, I guess, the style. You've got a really interesting, you got this, like, cute little shop with, like, plants and, you know, things on the windowsill and stuff. Looks like a cute little cottagey house.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a great presence on social media.
I mean, I like things to look nice.
Yeah.
I want to think that we're, you know, helping Aurora by keeping things looking pretty, and I have a thing for succulents. I can't keep them alive to save my life, so I have
really
fake ones all over the place.
Are they really hard to kill?
That's what people say. Well, they are not. Forget to water them, and then finally give them some water, and they go. So
maybe you should tell him why, how Chug got its name.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Chug, I loved it because it's kind of a play on words.
Our cafe was a play on letters, by the way.
Yeah, R&R. Yep,
yes.
R&R was our last name. It's Ruben Robeson. Chug Coffee, so I loved the fact that it was a play on words, because who doesn't need to chug a little coffee every once in a while? But it's actually after my dog, Jack, who is a chug. He's a Chihuahua pug. I just got him last year. Yeah, last year after losing my dog of 14 years. And he just has the silliest face and a goofy little underbite.
Yeah.
And I just kept looking at him and thinking, Jack, you're just so cute. I think you should be our mascot, but what should I name this coffee shop?
Right.
And so one day I was coming down my stairs and he was sitting down at the bottom of the stairs waiting to greet me. And I just looked at him and said, Jack, you need to be my mascot. Your face is so cute. And then it just dawned on me. I was like, oh my gosh, Chug Coffee. Why not?
Yeah.
So the logo, the dog that's cut out, is actually the silhouette of my dog, Jack.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. It was a great play on words. And yeah, jacked up coffee just wouldn't have the same name. Very different implications there. Right?
That's a good one, though. I like that one, too.
Yeah. So, Paula, what do you think about all this?
I think it's awesome. I'm so proud.
Yeah.
My proud mama.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What about your menu? Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, you're going to find pretty much the same things you're going to find at most places. I will say this for the record.
You're supposed to say,
everything's different. Super unique. I mean, no, our name, you know, our drink specials, sure.
Yeah.
Where's the going with that? You see, you made me lose my train
That's
of thought. It's okay. For the record, I will say, we will not have blended drinks right off the bat.
Okay.
It is something we're working on. I know it's summertime and everybody wants those, but we're figuring out space and all of that fun stuff.
Sure.
Our menu, you're going to find a lot of your favorites that you would usually find.
Yeah.
We do have a few highlighted drinks as like our favorites.
Uh-huh.
The Jack is, of course, named after my dog, Jack.
Yeah, that's what I got here.
Yes, which
delicious.
Is, yeah, it's kind of like a caramel macchiato, but it's got a little bit of a cardamom-y flavor there instead of just your straight vanilla.
Yeah.
We have the Lula, which at R&R I called the French toast mocha.
Yeah.
And that one is
dog,
actually,
by the way.
Yep, that one's named after my other dog, Lula. So,
did you get licensing from all these dogs? Just to make sure. I don't want you guys to get in trouble down the road. Okay, we'll figure that out later.
Yeah. My little rescued babies. And then we have the underbite, because I just thought his underbite needed to be shown a little more. So, you know, it's a little mocha with a spicy little kick, just like a little underbite.
This is really cute.
Yeah, and then we just kind of played with the dog theme. I thought, you know, we already named it Chug Coffee with a dog.
We've got some non-coffee drinks and stuff
we
as
do,
well.
We do, yeah. So we do Italian sodas, and then we also offer, so not Red Bull, sorry all you Red Bull drinkers, we have Lotus Energy, which is actually more of a natural-based energy drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, it comes in a concentrate, and we mix them up with tons of different flavors, splash a little coconut milk in it, which makes it a little creamy.
Yeah.
It's just better sustained energy, so you don't get that crash like you do with Red Bull.
Yeah.
And then you don't get that kind of...
Well, then you just drink another Red Bull.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's how they make their money, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so if you are a fan of Red Bull, the Red Lotus actually tastes very similar to Red Bull.
Nice.
There's that slight bite, I like to say, that you get from a Red Bull. There's just that certain flavor that you get from it that you won't get from the Lotus, but you still kind of get that Red Bull taste, I guess. So if you like Red Bull, I always suggest starting with that one. But for those like myself, who's not a big fan of Red Bull, I love the Pink Lotus or the Blue Lotus because they're fruitier tasting.
Yeah.
My favorite's with raspberry, coconut, and guava in the Pink Lotus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually called Puppy Kisses on our menu.
Really ramming it home with those dog things.
Why not? Might as well keep the theme going, right?
I'm imagining the Waggy special and
we do have some specials coming up for our customers.
I love it.
Potentially running a special where they send us pictures of their dogs.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
And then
we'll make a monthly drink after somebody's dog.
The monthly drink will be whatever their dog's name is with their dog's picture.
Yeah, because people love to share pictures of their dogs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have dogs. We have four dogs. She has two. I have four.
At work, that's like the only, my boss, does like regular emails and stuff. The only one that's like ever gotten like a huge response was like, send me a picture of your dog. And it was like hundreds she had a picture of her dog and then everyone else was like, this is mine, this is mine.
Yeah, a little bit of happy in your day, why not?
Yeah. Well, I know everyone's dying to know opening date and I understand you're a little tentative about saying exactly when just because there's things that are maybe outside your control.
Right. Yeah, we're just waiting now. The last thing that we have on our list is our health inspection, which is coming up on Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Okay.
So as long as that passes, you can expect to see Chug open in the next week.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. Anything for either of you guys to add before you go? We're really excited for you. Everything's looking great in here. I guess not too many customers will see the inside of this place. They'll see more of the outside, which
the decoration's awesome. More for me because I got to work in here all the time. May as well make it look cute in here too, right?
Right.
I don't have anything else to add other than I'm really excited to meet new people and serve up some good coffee and, have some conversation with some people. I miss people.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Come see us.
Awesome. Chug Coffee. What is the address? So it's basically like come through the main antique-y part of Aurora.
Yeah.
If you're coming from Canby,
It's in the parking lot of Portland Laser Engraving.
Right.
It's across 99 from the post office, but the actual address for Chug Coffee is 21030 Highway 99E in Aurora.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck to you.
Thanks.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hair and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.